Hello, welcome to Theatre Voice. This week, a dip into our archives. It's almost a decade since the Shunt Vault shut up shop. Every time I walk through the new London Bridge Station concourse, with its skincare stores and its fancy fast food chains, my mind rewinds to its days as a dark, damp, sweaty subterranean performance space. A place where, for a while, anything seemed possible. I can't be the only one. For 7 years, Shunt filled those brick railway arches with phantasmagoria. In Tropicana, Copacabana-style showgirls rode around in hearses. In the Hitchcockian Amato Saltone, humanoid pigs crept across tiled rooftops and a swingers party threatened to kick right off. Their surrealist shows were heart-pumping, head-spinning, immersive spectaculars. Having formed out of Central School of Speech and Drama in 1998, Shunt had already run a makeshift venue in Bethnal Green. But the vaults were a huge step up. They turned it into an essential space for experimental theatre and live art, hosting performances of all shapes and sizes alongside raucous, money-making club nights. It gave a leg up to a generation of alt artists and, crucially, allowed performance to meet an unsuspecting public. It is today dearly missed. With that in mind, this episode offers something of a time trip. Back in 2004, just as Shunt was settling in, Dominic Cavendish took a trip underground with founding member David Rosenberg to explore Shunt's exhilarating new found space.
This space was, for the last 30 to 40 years, was used by a wine merchant. It was a bonded warehouse. So there was, it was absolutely, completely full of wine bottles. And they cleared out about a year ago. And since then, well, actually, we were looking in this area for a space not much bigger than, well, about twice the size of the space we had in Bethnal Green. And then we happened to be coming in as the wine merchants were moving out, so we had the opportunity to have a look around. And we were completely gobsmacked by the space. I mean, it's just it's the most unbelievable, huge labyrinth. And we're walking up one of the, what is actually the smaller corridor. I'll see the larger one a little later on. The whole process took about a year to sort out. We started sort of entering into negotiations with Network Rail as soon as we saw the space. Yeah. Very fortunately, we found out that the new London Bridge station is going to be built. Or at the time when we were first speaking to them, they were saying that there's a new project for the London Bridge station, which was to be started within 2 years, and so that's why we had any kind of chance in being able to use the space, because normally, I mean, in this area, the minimum that a space like this costs is about £4 a square foot a year, so it would clearly be it would have been a prohibitive price for annual rental. But because it was only going to be for a short term let, then we had an opportunity to be able to use the space in the interim period for what we initially thought was going to be free. But then, as time went on, we realised that by us trying to get the space for free actually meant that Spacia didn't do anything at all. So eventually, we did have to offer them £35,000 a year.
Yeah.
Which at the time when we were thinking about that, it seemed like a completely impossible amount to raise, certainly for the financial conditions that we had at the time when we were negotiating this. But fortunately, since then, there's been quite a bit of funding that's come through, so that is actually quite a small part of what the overall budget for this project is. Now, we're in the first year of this project, we're only going to be licensing half of the space, so the space from the point that we've just come through, for the rest of the space that I'm going to show you. And so the first performance will take place in the area that we're moving into now. The other part of the space will be used for private events, more workshop activities and other more experimental work. But this is where the toilets are going to be at some point. Plumber came around today. Fortunately, Southwark Council, and especially the building control in Southwark, they seem quite sensitive to the fact that we're only here for a short-term period. So they are that they will accept quite minimal standards of work. So we really do just need to get in the basics, and we're not going to. That it won't have any effect to the actual sort of structure or the appearance of the building. I mean, everything that we'll put in will try and look as shabby as the rest of it. Everything takes an enormous amount of time here. So, like, if you forget to turn the lights on, you've got to walk for 10 minutes in order to get to the light switch to put it on.
Do you have it kind of fairly clearly mapped out, then, what this work that you're about to embark on is... partly how much space it's going to use up? So presumably the mind boggles at the amount of space you could use.
I mean, that's one of the only things we do know about the next show. And that's probably the greatest challenge in a performance in this space is how to move an audience around within it. And we intend, like it all, almost all of our previous productions, that the audience are going to have quite an active role, or certainly they're not there. We're not going to be building a theatre within here. We want the whole space to be used by the audience, moving around within it with action happening around them, because the space is just a network of many smaller spaces. It's a very complex project in order to get the audience to be able to move around and to see things and to feel that they're part of a whole show, as opposed to sort of a fragmented... We're not particularly interested in what is maybe normally considered to be promenade performance. I mean, I suppose that's a bit unfair. I mean, there's lots of different types of that, but certainly not the type of performance where an audience sort of move from place to place in order to see isolated scenes. That's not really something that interests us. And this space is really, it would really push to that kind of performance. So that's what we're trying to sort of fight against, to find how an audience can be in here and feel that they're part of this whole space, but still find places where all of the audience can see the same thing at one time. Or this is an entrance which is basically inside London Bridge Underground Station. You come straight out of the Underground Station, and just on the other side of the barriers, there's this little grey door in the wall that just says fire exit, do not obstruct. I mean, it's so much part of the tube architecture that you would never notice it. But then you open the door, and then suddenly you can just see this enormous...
I mean, we should say we're standing in almost pitch darkness now, looking down to a vista of receding arches that seems to go on for miles. Can you explain them? Did you have to leave Bethnal Green? Were you finding it rather small, but for your needs?
One of the main reasons we left is because we'd done quite a few different performances in that space, and we needed to find a different space in order to inspire a new performance. So much of our work comes out of the space itself that we're working in. So it was totally necessary for us to find a new space in order to make a new piece of work. But we weren't... I mean, as I said before, we were only looking for something about twice the size, and then chanced upon we needed to get it, and it took a year. It took a year of times when they were saying, we're going to need to find someone that would be able to pay more money. And sometimes it was they were worried about safety implications, the fact that it's right underneath London Bridge Station. So there were lots of during the whole negotiation. So lots of points where we thought that it wasn't going to happen, and in a way, we never really believed that it was going to happen because it's so insane. But we're here.
So what happens, what will, before we go back a bit to what you're doing, what you have done, what's going to happen to this space then at the end of, what is it going to be, 2 years? It's going to be redeveloped.
Since, I mean, even though it started off with the idea that there was only going to be 2 years usage, since then things have changed quite a bit as far as the time scale for the London Bridge Station project. So now we've got a 3-year lease, and it seems very unlikely that that anything is going to happen with this project for another 5, maybe 10 years. So we do have the opportunity to now to think about this as on a more permanent basis, and we're thinking 5 years would be a good amount of time.
Well, before we just do the history of Shunt, if you can reveal the history of Shunt, maybe some of it has to be kind of shrouded in a certain mythological mist. But the forthcoming show, then, can you say a bit about that?
Probably not about that show. That is certainly the mist. We ourselves can't penetrate it, unfortunately. So there's nothing to expect. You don't know whether you're going to be sitting down. You don't know. I mean, certainly with this space, you don't know how big the space is. You don't know where the space is going to go. I mean, it's going to be such a mystery being in here, that secrecy is of the utmost importance. I mean, the secrecy at the moment is, we're still working through lots of different ideas, and there isn't really a cohesive plan yet of what, and not enough to be able to talk about it anyway.
The company is perhaps best known for its last show, Dance Bear Dance, which was staged at the base you had in Bethnal Green under the railway arches, and it delivered what Nick Heitner described as the most astonishing coup de théâtre he'd ever seen, when a great metal door was pulled back, separating the two arches, and the audience in one saw that another audience had been watching exactly the same show in the adjacent space. I mean, let's go back to the beginning, to other productions. What came first? Was there a desire among a group of people to work together, or was there a particular show that kicked it all off?
It was a show that came first. It was a show called Twist, which was based on medieval torture, which is quite funny. The show was funny. Obviously, medieval torture is not funny. And it was a desire to carry on working and in the same way that we had done to create that show. And the first thing we did was get a space, the space in Bethnal Green, which we all sort of contributed a tenner a week to, and then the same 10 people just stuck with it. For the whole time.
So Twist was in which year? 1999, was it?
1998.
And that was where did you perform that then?
That piece was performed in theatres. That was performed in up at the Edinburgh Festival and in BAC. And that was also, at that point, there was a kind of a decision to just work in more unusual spaces. Although since then there were a couple of re-entries into theatre spaces for smaller projects, but all of them are sort of unsatisfactory in some way or other.
Can you say how you first met?
We met, the 10 of us met at an MA, a postgraduate degree in Central, which was called Advanced Theatre Practice. And it was a real, and out of us, and there was quite a broad range of different sort of previous experience and skills. From sort of aerialist, dancer, fine art. The show Twist was what we'd created when we were there. And the age range within the company is between the youngest, I think, is 29, and the oldest is 39.
Can you talk through the major shows you've done?
There's been the main company shows, which the first one being the Ballad of Bobby Francois, which ran for a couple of years in different stages of development and in different spaces, which was about the Uruguay rugby team that crashed in the Andes and resorted to cannibalism in order to stay alive. The audience all came in. I mean, their role within that performance were was of passengers on an aircraft, and they came into the fuselage of an aircraft, which crashed. And the crash was quite amazing. I mean, basically, it was an audio crash in the darkness that really was quite unsettling, where the fuselage was sort of ripped away from them, and then they were sort of left in what was to be considered the Andes, which was normally a railway arch, of course. Another railway arch. Then the next big company show was the tennis show, which was just where the main point of interest in that show was that the audience was split up into men and women, and they saw different perspectives of the performance based on their sex. So there's the Ballad of Bobby Francois, then the tennis show, then Sightings, which was a project in Croydon Clock Tower, in the whole of the building of Croydon Clock Tower, where we imagined that it was filling with water, and that was more of an installation type performance, where the general public were just using the building while we wandered about, oddly. but it was there was an amazing climax where an aerialist dove from a diving board down into the past the windows of the library, and then past the caff, and landing in a bucket, or narrowly missing a bucket. But so that was Sightings, and then after that was Dance Bear Dance, and during all of that time, there was quite a lot of smaller projects that different combinations or individuals within the company were involved with, such as Pink Orthodox, Works on Canvas, which was a show about boxing by Heather, Hedwig and Stoller, a couple of different performances, and some other works by Misha, such an angel of history.
Shunt describe themselves as a collective. Is that's an important ethos for you, is it?
There's 10 people, and we try and keep certainly important decisions. We try and make those as a collective. So obviously it takes a while to decide on anything. But it's all good. I mean, it also acts as its own quality control, because the 10 of us have got very different opinions and ideas and also tastes as well. So in order to get something sort of past the 10 of us, then it's normally a very solid idea or good idea that everyone will agree to.
Yeah. Can you say who you are? Because sometimes I don't think you even necessarily do programs. Maybe I'm wrong, but
no. Normally on all our programs, it just says devised, directed, designed, performed by Shunt. So the people in the company, we've tended for us to keep more anonymous. And one of the reasons for that is that it's we don't want to get into this thing where people see the work and say, yes, set designer Lizzie Clacken did a stunning piece of work, or this performer was really great. And because it's the way that we make the work isn't about that. It is very collaborative in the way that the work, in the way that ideas sort of contribute to whatever the given project. So everyone is contributing to all the different aspects of the show. So then, not necessarily everyone would do that, to single people out when they actually see the performance. We just try and avoid that happening, because it just wouldn't reflect it doesn't really reflect what is actually going on in the way we're making the work.
So, David, what's your role then?
Well, I mean, my role within quite a few of the projects that we've done is the director, but that has got a very different meaning in our work. I mean, sometimes that basically means that I'm I'm drilling holes in the ceiling to put in eye bolts, or digging holes in the floor. You know, I do as much work with a hammer drill or a pneumatic drill or pliers as I do actually, you know, directing as what, in the traditional sense of the word. So, and also the direction is that it isn't just me. It isn't, I mean, quite a lot of the performers will be finding their own blocking. You know, they'll be writing their own text, and I suppose the director is a sort of coordination of these different elements that make up the performance.
How would you characterise the kind of work you do in general? I mean, do you think of it as theatre or performance art, or what kind of labels would you, if you had to find a label, what kind of label would you apply?
I've always sort of struggling for the way that we'd like to be defined, and it's very difficult because you have to be in certain respects you have to be pigeonholed. Like, for example, the theatre press are the section of the press that have always supported and been interested in the work. So great, but we don't, and there's clearly. What we're doing is clearly theatre in some description of the word, but it's also very definitely not a Pinter play, and the fact that the word theatre is so, especially in this country, is so tied to the idea of a type of building. I mean, that as well is something that we've been moving away from. I mean, it's the whole experience of an evening is very important for us. It's not, we have done some shows in theatres, and it's always been very unsatisfactory, this idea that the audience would come to that theatre's box office, go to that theatre's bar, even use that theatre's toilets, and then come and see the show, our show, and then leave again and have the same sort of experience with that is beyond our control. It's very important for us for that whole evening, like the way that you enter the space from the point that where you leave the space is all part of the performance in a way, and that's a sort of key element for the way that we work.
It seems that you're very interested in the relationship between the audience and the performers, and in fact almost in the role of the audience. Is that right?
One of the sort of main things that we're working on is the idea of how an audience can be active within a performance in ways that are interesting, not just forcing that issue by making someone participate by you know, pointing at them and asking them for some kind of response, which is quite often very uncomfortable and not that interesting. But it's how an audience can really have an active role in a performance in a way that adds to the performance in a way that is important for the performance. I mean, it's a very interesting subject, and that's what with each show we try and find other ways that the audience what the audience role is within the piece, and how they can be involved in ways that they want to be involved.
And one of the reasons why what one calls fringe companies go to established spaces, and most of them are hardly spaces at all, they're shoeboxes. They don't have the resources to. Or perhaps they don't consider that they have the resources to kind of find a space and build into it what they want. In terms of the logistics, how did you go about supporting yourselves as performers and finding the resources to transform a space in Bethnal Green? Even that seems like a Herculean effort.
I mean, all of us had a very strong commitment to staying together and making work, and we did what was necessary in order to make that happen. So. I mean, for the first 4 years, no one was really getting paid anything. I mean, there was times that we had Arts Council grants for shows, which gave some temporary relief, but but on the whole, people had to do other work, and so everyone was just balancing doing enough outside work in order to make enough money in order to be able to put the maximum amount of time into what Shunt was doing. And that was something, I mean, it's something that is still going on now. I mean, we've now, by deciding to take over this enormous space, suddenly the various different financial implications of that now mean that we're kind of back to square one again as far as as far as actually getting paid for the work that we're doing. So, but we're hoping, and in our very optimistic financial plans for the following few years, we're hoping that that will change, and as soon as we get a show open here, that we will be able to start employing ourselves on a much more permanent basis. So we can start giving up all of our other work.
You talked very eloquently about what you wanted yourselves in a way, but I wondered what you wanted of other theatre when you look at the what is still called the fringe. I mean, is part of what motivates Shunt a feeling that it's not going on, the kind of activity that you want to see on the fringe or in theatre isn't really happening? And I don't know what you sense the scene's doing, really, apart from you.
I mean, I really don't like the term the term fringe, especially not when you see it as within London as fringe, off West End, West End, as being categories of theatre. It seems like quite an odd way to categorise an art form, as opposed to, I mean, there's like within a music section of a paper will have classical music, new wave music, electronic music. I mean, that seems like a much better way to categorise an art form, in that it actually says something about the work that you're going to see, as in its content, not about how much money they have or its location, which and fringe, unfortunately, except for a few older people who are still excited about maybe what the fringe used to mean, now to most people, I believe, the fringe does mean cheap or bad. Quite often, or in a pokey space, or it's not. And unfortunately, actually, most of it is. Most of it, if you go through a fringe section of Time Out or whatever, then you look at what's being shown in all of these pub theatres or small fringe spaces, and quite often it is the same kind of spectrum of things that are in the off West End and the West End listings, only smaller, and that doesn't seem like a particularly creative way to embrace the limitations that the fringe has. I mean, so we don't consider ourselves as fringe because we don't know what that really means. I mean, currently we have a space that's bigger than most West End theatres. I mean, not that our capacity will be.
Most people would be surprised that you've actually managed to find. I mean, one assumed until I came across Shunt, one assumed that the reason why people aren't taking on more adventurous spaces is because there just aren't any anymore, and London's been kind of weeded out of stuff, and you'd have to go out of London if you wanted to get an aircraft hangar or something. I don't know. I mean, were you surprised that you could get these spaces even?
I mean, we were surprised that we could get this one just because of it's the fact of its particular location and the weight and its size, basically. We're always looking for spaces. We're always looking around for spaces, and there are so many spaces around London, spaces that are waiting to be redeveloped, so could be used for short term periods of time. Other spaces that. I mean, that maybe like a commercial unit, shop fronts. I mean, there's lots of different possibilities for finding unusual spaces. Problem is that it's always the expense is. I mean, you need to have more of a sort of long-term commitment to that in order to make it work.
Theatre Voice is an audio archive about British theatre. You can subscribe to the weekly podcast on iTunes or visit our website, theatrevoice.com, for hundreds of interviews with the world's leading theatre makers. This episode was hosted by Dominic Cavendish and produced by Matt Truman and Helen Gush for the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Thanks for listening.